I haven't been down in Central Square in a while, and this is the second home of Kurzweil Computer Products. Kurzweil Computer Products was in Albany Street. I was there from 1982 until 1994. The original home of Kurzweil was where the Sonesta Hotel is now, near the Museum of Science. They kicked him out to make the hotel. They ended up at Albany Street. They were there for a really long time, and then they were moved to Peabody, which is really quite a change from being in Cambridge, I have to say, and maybe in some respects was the beginning of the decline of that particular company. Kurzweil Computer Products produced the first Omnifont optical character recognition technology, period. They more or less invented an early version of the scanner. I don't think there was any scanners before that company. They were not the first to do text-to-speech. There were a few other companies that did that, but they did do their own, and so they had their own text-to-speech engine for a while. Because the computers that were powerful enough to run OCR were way too expensive, they made their own computers. So rather than buying computers for the first two or three generations of the product, they would build their own. By the time I got there, they were still in the process of talking about bit slices and doing their own microprocessors, but within about 6 years, they had sort of moved to the inevitable and realized that there was suddenly increasingly more and more powerful processors that were available commercially that they could make for a lot cheaper than they could buy them. And they moved towards commercial technology in that kind of way. How many of you had or used a KRM once upon a time? Okay, so about four or five of you. Which generation?
In 1981, a huge box.
Yeah, sort of, I remember the small washing machine size.
Right.
Yeah, right. We actually have one in our office. The last standalone machine that was made by that company, which by this point had renamed itself, it was now Xerox Imaging Systems, was the Reading Edge. Yeah. And I imagine a number of you have used the Reading Edge at one point or another. And the amazing thing to me is I still once in a while see people asking for things like, I need a new power cord. How do I get that? The answer, that's an easy one. It's just a perfectly ordinary power cord. There are still people who use Reading Edges. There are still libraries in Massachusetts that have one available for lending out. I can't quite imagine someone lending out a Kurzweil 1000 from a library. So it's really nice to have a machine that you can do that with. So that kind of technology still being around is a good thing. Partly because, as a company, they had invested so heavily in proprietary hardware, Kurzweil Educational Systems, and by this point Xerox Imaging Systems, was, I think, kind of late getting to software-only machines. Probably somewhere on the web you can find the stupidest possible quote from the person who was then labeled the chief scientist of Xerox Imaging Systems, who said something like, I think we will have proprietary hardware for quite a while because there's really no reason to make a commercial PC that's powerful enough to run character recognition. That was me, I said that. And of course, you know, completely untrue.
What year was that you said?
When did I say that? That must have been late 80s. I underestimated how relentless technology is as it sort of takes over and moves along. How when you get a lot of people competing for a particular product space, like a PC, even if people really in the end, when you think about it, don't need to have even more cycles on their processor go by before they click push a key, nonetheless, you're still going to fight on the basis of processor power for a long time. The other reason is I wasn't thinking about games. What really drove the high-end, incredibly fast technology of the PC, and still does, is games. Games require enormous amounts of computer power. So you can thank all those people in software, for example, who wrote incredible games that use enormous amounts of computer power, because things like that drove that market, and suddenly software products made more sense. I'm not sure. I'm trying to think of what the first blindness-oriented, software-only OCR product was. And it's between the first generation of OpenBook, which is a possibility from Arkenstone, and the other possibility is the product from TSI, Telesensory. Anyone remember the name?
Oscar!
Looking back on those early products in the development, I give the nod to Oscar as being a wonderful, very technically advanced, but very cool in a lot of ways. It really was a neat thing. And some of the ideas that, in the end, I've taken credit for within Kurzweil 1000 really had their start in Oscar. Oscar was tremendous product development. By the way, the engineer who was there later went to Arkenstone and did a lot of work with OpenBook, and eventually went to the new venture that the founder of Arkenstone has, which is Jim Fruchterman, and it's
Benetech.
And among other things, Bookshare.org is their baby. Okay. And Bookshare.org, of course, is an incredible and truly wonderful thing, and continues to be more and more wonderful. Xerox Imaging Systems changed their name again as it moved from being a Xerox company to be one that was sort of more privately held. They eventually became ScanSoft. And somewhere along the line, they sold off all their adaptive technology to Telesensory, actually, to TSI. It was going to be Optelec, and something happened, and it ended up being TSI. They became focused largely and pretty much entirely on commercial optical character recognition. They eventually realized the commercial OCR was not going to grow that company to the size they wanted it. They got into all sorts of other things. And I, for a long time, thought of them as being the company that was really, really good at investing in very difficult, very exciting technology that no one was ever going to buy. Because they also got into speech recognition very, very heavily, into text-to-speech very heavily. And they changed their name again, what, 4 or 5 years ago? They're Nuance.
Yeah.
It turns out an awful lot of the technology that is in Kurzweil 1000, or for that matter in OpenBook, is owned by Nuance. And it's really kind of odd that this company that was once an adaptive technology company remains a powerhouse of technology that adaptive technology companies use. And it itself has something to do, by the way, with certain talking phone systems that blind people do use. So they're still kind of in that business in a little way. I left it sort of when I saw the writing on the wall, when they was clearly were not investing in blindness products, when they were doing more and more stuff with commercial OCR. I left partly out of a slightly misplaced sense of moral outrage that they were, in my opinion, at the time, their commercial stuff wasn't making money. Their blindness stuff was. And they were taking money out of the blindness market, basically, and investing it very heavily in new commercial ventures. It's allowed. You can do that as a company. There's nothing incredibly wrong about it, but it felt really evil to me. It was just not something I wanted to be part of. I left, did other things for a few years, and one of the other sort of adaptive technology refugees from that company called me one day because he wanted to start a new company. And what the new company would do is get back into the reading machine software market for the blind, but also use that technology to do something that had been investigated at Xerox Imaging Systems, but they never really did a great job of it, which was the same technology, OCR, text-to-speech, embedded in a product that was for people who could see. And that product would be sold in the education market for people who can see but cannot read. Typically, they can't read because of dyslexia, but it could be that they can't read because of ADHD. They can't read because they just can't attend to a book for a long enough period of time. Or maybe a product like that would have use in ESL markets. English is a second language, or also known as ELL, and so there was a lot of interest in that. The company was Kurzweil Educational Systems. I had the opportunity to be the first employee. I turned them down. I think I was the fourth employee by the time I finally decided to join. What was the name of the blindness product, by the way, that they put out? Trick question. You're supposed to say Kurzweil 1000. It was Omni 1000. Okay. For the first three generations of that product, it was Omni 1000. Kind of a dumb reason. Well, you know, we had to change that name eventually. And we had to change it because the people who owned OmniPage didn't like us using that name if we weren't using their technology, and at that time we were not. So we changed our name to Kurzweil 1000 and have been that ever since. The Kurzweil 3000, which was the educational product, followed about 6 months after the 1000. When the 1000 came out, its big competitors, Oscar was, I think, kind of gone. The big competitors were OpenBook, which at this point had become a software-based product. It wasn't originally. And Reading Advantage. Anyone remember Reading Advantage?
Yeah. I remember the name.
So Reading Advantage was done by Xerox Imaging Systems, and it was sort of billed as a companion product to Reading Edge. Same idea, except it would be a software-based product. I'm the one who championed that product and can tell you it was an uphill struggle there because they really didn't want to hurt sales of a hardware product by doing that product, and they thought they might. But they were beginning to lose sales to OpenBook, and so I said, wouldn't you rather lose sales to yourself than to someone else? And so we did that product. It was the first product I ever owned, sort of from start to finish, and did every bit of, and I liked that experience. It was fun. So I did that for two releases, and again, I left, and one reason I left is they didn't want me to do the third release. They wanted me to work on something else for a while. I wasn't willing to do that. Reading Advantage was still around, although it had lost its backing in some respects, in that there was no technical group doing a lot of development or support for it. OpenBook remained a vibrant, good, solid product, except my sense of why we had an opening against Arkenstone is that Arkenstone was doing a release every 2.5-3 years, and I thought that was way too slow. I thought there was a lot of opportunity to make a better product by paying attention to what customers say about your product in one version, and then getting out a product soon enough so that they can actually say, oh, that was my idea, because in 2.5 years, they'll have forgotten entirely. I wanted something more of a conversation. I wanted a product whereby you put out the product, lots of people comment about it, good and bad, and then, while they're still talking about it, you put out the next release. There was a release every 6 months of Omni 1000 for the first 4 or 5 years of that product's development. And that was kind of unheard of in adaptive technology. Adaptive technology primarily has been, in the past, a hardware business. Usually, a startup in adaptive technology is funded by the government. They put out their first release, they're very proud of it, and some day comes over a couple years later where they go, oh no, we have to do another release. And they don't really, without grants, have a great way, particularly in a hardware-based product, of getting to that next and improved release. Since most adaptive technology companies evolved out of that era, they didn't like the idea of doing a product release every year, or every year and a half, or certainly not every half year, because they are expensive. And essentially, in order to sustain their businesses in a hardware market, they can't make changes that fast. Or they couldn't. Weren't able to, often. Really couldn't afford to. Didn't have the money to make that happen. Because you can't continue to go to the federal government and say, you funded the first release, how about the fourth release? You know, that's just not exciting after a while. Even though it's important to get that fourth release out. One reason why I think Omni 1000 succeeded is indeed that we did releases really fast and we evolved the product really quickly. Another reason was sheer dumb luck. Right about the time we put out the first release of that product, we had access to a technology that hadn't existed before and that no one else had, and that was software-based text-to-speech, FlexTalk. That really hadn't existed before. Until then, speech cost $400 to $1,000. Speech was really expensive. And all of a sudden, here's this new speech engine on the market that did not, in fact, cost us huge amounts of money. It was in software. And that was really exciting. The product itself was okay, but not very exciting in its first several releases. The reason people came over to look at the product is they wanted to hear the new voice. Blind people are speech junkies. And there's a lot of different types of speech available, and it's fun to hear it. Interestingly, the other part of that is that people habituate to speech. You may want to listen to some other new speech, that's neat, but at the end of the day, when you want to read a book, you'll settle on the speech engine that you've had and listened to for the last 6 years. It may not be because it's the best one, but it is something you habituate to. And learning a new speech is always kind of annoying for a while. That's this product in a nutshell. We are now at Kurzweil 1000 version 12. We no longer release every 6 months. We don't release every year either. We're slower than that. I would argue at this point in that product's life cycle, every 2 years is about right, because that's sort of the cycle of how often new OCR is released. So ideally, I would like to do a product release every 2 years. This one was more like 3 years. That is because Kurzweil Educational Systems no longer owns itself. We were sold first to Learn Out and Housby. That didn't work so well. We bought ourselves back out. Then we were sold to Cambium Learning Systems. Cambium Learning Systems, by the way, is going to change its name in another 3 weeks. It's going to be Voyager, because we're being merged with another bigger educational publishing company named Voyager. The good news is I'm still there, and I'm still given permission, basically now every 2 years, to take the amount of time it takes and make a product release. Now, this is an incredibly long prologue. Does anyone want to know what's in version 12? Or,
Why don't you start by just giving an overview of what it does? We have people in the room who don't know what OCR is.
OCR is a very technical term. It stands for optical character recognition. It's basically the technology of trying to teach a computer how to read print. Turns out that's a really difficult, nasty problem, and one that is not entirely ever successfully solved. You can't make it perfect. You can, however, make it a lot better than it used to be, and in fact, it's dramatically better than it once was. I mean, nowadays, when you slap something onto a scanner and push a button, you have reasonably high expectations that you'll understand what it says. That didn't used to be the case, and wasn't the case, you know, even when we were still selling and people were buying reading machines. The idea of optical character recognition for the blind is to provide access to material that is in print. That's becoming a less important topic than it once was. Used to be, once upon a time, nearly everything you got was in print. Now, a lot of your information that you might want access to is available in electronic form on the internet. The original idea with a product like an Omni 1000 or Kurzweil 1000 is to give you a product where you can put a piece of paper on a scanner, push a button, and have it read to you. Well, once you have it start reading to you, clearly you're going to want it to be able to stop and start and back up and spell something or say it more slowly or use a different voice. Or maybe you want a dictionary if it's a word you don't understand. If one's going to go to all the trouble of essentially reading this stuff aloud in a sequence, it's probably going to be in an editor window, and maybe you'd like to give it the ability to correct the mistakes that are there when you scan the material. So you might want it to also be a talking editor. By the way, Omni 1000 first release, no editor. The editor was version 3, I think. So it took us a while to get to an editor function. And it was precisely because one blind person, Mary Otten, said, you know, it's really annoying to hear the same mistake again and again. It'd be nice if I could just fix it. That type of functionality was added. What else do you want to do? If you're scanning, and if you're capturing text from a scanned document, you might want to, now that you can edit it, you might want to also be able to save it. And you might want to be able to save it in a bunch of different file formats because you have other programs that you want to use with that data, or you might want to be able to send it via email to somebody else. So that's something else that perhaps a product like this should be able to do, and it does. You want to be able to save it as a Word document so that you can open it in Word. You might want to save lots of different pages and put bookmarks in them for where each chapter starts, because bookmarks make it a lot easier to figure out what you've already read or to produce something that a bunch of other people are going to read later. So you do that. Once you add enough reading-oriented and study skill technology, you want access to something other than what you just scanned. So you want access to all the other text that's on your computer in whatever format. And Kurzweil 1000 is the only product I know of that could read, you know, WordStar 2000 documents if you had them on your computer, or documents in all sorts of different forms. If you downloaded something off the internet, you'd want to be able to read that. Except maybe accessing the internet was sufficiently hard that we could make that easier. And as repositories of books became available on the internet, like bookshare.org, we added functionality in Kurzweil 1000 to automatically let you specify a title or a author's name and let us search the internet for things you can download and read that match the search criteria. So we do that for a number of different repositories, including NLS WebRail, Bookshare.org, a handful of others. Gutenberg, for example, is another. Lots of other stuff gets added over time. And in the end, you find yourself feeling a little silly calling it scan and read software or whatever else. You end up realizing you don't have a name for this technology anymore. It's just this big wad of stuff that we put on one CD and call a product. And because we keep doing it, our competitors end up thinking, well, in order to be this kind of product, we need all this stuff too. So, you know, you have this arms race going on between the other people and us in this market. The peripheral that you use to scan is, oddly enough, something called a scanner. Scanners, we don't sell them for the most part. We don't do hardware. We recommend scanners, but there are lots of scanners on the market, and they range in price from basically free to $1,000. But you can get really pretty decent scanners in the $100 to $200 price range. Now there is a new kind of technology on the market that some of you know about, I'm sure, which is electronic camera-based or telephone-based. We're not there. And there's a bunch of reasons why we're not there. It's kind of technical. It has two advantages over scan. One big advantage and one little advantage. Big advantage is it's more portable. You know, you can carry these things around with you. The second advantage, which isn't quite as perfect, but it's still often pretty good, is it can be really, really fast. It doesn't take that much time to take a picture. Now, the reason I say that's not as big is because, in fact, you can get a really fast scanner. Scanners can match that speed, but most scanners don't. There are also things that you can take a picture of that you can't readily put on a scanner, and maybe they will read, maybe they won't. The bad side is that the image from a camera is not as good as a scanner. Further, the degrees of freedom you have in terms of the way you hold the camera, the angle you are from the original, the distance you are from the original, all that other stuff are much, much greater than they are for a scanner. And so it's way easier to get a really bad read with a camera than it is with a scanner. It takes practice, and eventually people usually get it. I do know of lots of people who return the things and say they just don't work. And they're wrong, they do work, but they take practice and they take experimentation until you get to the point where you know how to do it. But it is a nice product category.
Which brand of scanner do you recommend? Particular ones you recommend?
In my opinion, cheap and good and light. So they make very good portable scanners. The Canon LIDE series is great. Just a great set of scanners. They generally don't even require a power cord. The USB drives the power. So it's a great scanner for portability. They weigh almost nothing. Price range for an LIDE scanner ranges from $40 up to $120 maybe. They're reasonably priced. And the ones with higher numbers are often really pretty fast, too.
When you say it's portable, what do you mean by portable?
I mean, I could stick it in a knapsack and it weighs under a pound.
And it's a flatbed scanner?
It is a flatbed scanner, 8.5 by 11 inch platen, but it's very thin and designed to be carried. Epson has always made good scanners, a little more expensive, a little bigger. I love their software. I love the way a product like Kurzweil 1000 works with that scanner, so I tend to still suggest them. The downside of most Epsons is for their price, they're a little on the slow side. HP scanners in general are okay, often very well designed, well engineered. I hate their software. Always have, always will. If you install everything that comes with an HP scanner, you will have messed up your PC in so many ways.
Yep.
I have issues with their software. Their hardware is really pretty good. We run a Twain interface, so it runs, in theory, invisibly. It does not bring up a window. It does not take over the screen. It doesn't show its own user interface. HP has never figured out that if its Twain interface is invisible, it probably ought not to have keyboard focus.
That's right.
And just amazingly stupid. Yeah. However, they have good functionality for the price. It's not a bad machine. In general, I do have a tendency to turn people a little bit away from them, but it can be good. Brother, on the other hand, is a really mixed bag. Some Brother scanners end up working really, really well and are fast and are cheap and just seem like a great, great choice. And then you get others and it's impossible to make them work. And it's sometimes hard for us to even keep up with which is which, particularly since Brother is not a model of scanner you tend to see in stores. Fujitsu, pretty good. Some of their higher-end scanners are good. Canon, the very high-end, is truly wonderful scanners, but really high-end. Where document feeders become important, often you can... Document feeders you can spend a lot of money on. If it's important to you, great. If it's something you think you will need once in a while, be prepared for them to be often more frustrating than they're worth on the low end, because the pages will jam, it'll draw two pages instead of one. Yeah, everything possible will go wrong with it. And it's one of the things that scanners vary more dramatically in terms of the software interface for the document feeder than anything else. It's something they tend not to get done well. High-end Canon scanner, and we're talking really high-end, like several $1,000s, there are scanners with 500-page document feeders that never fail. But those kinds of high-end machines are not ideal. Finally, one other scanner really worth mentioning. I always hesitate a little bit because they see themselves as big competitors for people like me. Plustek. great scanner. The Plustek OpticBook Pro is available in several different models. Only two of them have any difference in the hardware. There's a faster version and a slower version, but even the slower version is really plenty fast. This is a fast machine, but its real claim to fame is it has a book edge. So if you are scanning a book and the book is big enough that you want to scan a page at a time, it's the only scanner where you can comfortably place a book such that you can get an image near the binding of that book one page at a time. Plustek OpticBook Pro, really a wonderful scanner. It's the OpticBook 3600 is the one I tend to know. They start only at around, what, 240, 300? They have more expensive models, but in general it's because they're providing software that you probably don't want. They just came out with their latest release of that software, and I will say they make me embarrassed at the price of my product. Kurzweil 1000 is $995. The high-end OpticBook Pro, which includes a scanner but also includes text-to-speech and a program that they claim is a good reading machine for the blind and that works and interacts with their buttons really well and all this other stuff, is around, I think, $750 to $800, and that includes the scanner. That's really a great price. However, the downside is I've never heard anyone say anything good about the software. You know, part of me thinks, great, I can still make a living. And the other part is it's sort of disappointing. It would be nice if it were a better product than it was.
What about multifunction? Can you use that?
Yes. And they're getting better. Sometimes if you go to a store, it's the only thing that looks like a scanner. The only scanners they have nowadays for sale are often multifunction machines. The bad news is that frequently the scanner is the weak link in the technology they're providing. As a printer, it's a perfectly good inkjet printer. As a fax machine, it's fine. It can make copies, but they might be a little on the slow side. And then you go to the scanning functionality, and it's really slow, and it's really awkward, and yeah, it's just, it's not ideal. The Epson multifunction machine is one I know works really well. Some of the HP ones are okay. They generally work. They generally do come with a Twain interface. We have a tendency to not recommend them because if you're only using it as a scanner, you're spending money you don't need to spend, and you're probably getting a scanner not as good for that amount of money as if you just got a scanner. But if you want all that other stuff, and you may well, then sure, by all means. This year and last year, of course, as a company, like most other companies, Cambium was challenged economically by what was going on around it. We've been through maybe three or four rounds of layoffs of different sizes over the last 3 years. And we still survive, but we are really cut to the bone in some respects. And some of the things we used to do that I hope we can do again as we can start hiring again would include scanner evaluation. We just haven't done it in a long time. In the way in which I want to do it again, by the way, just to let you know, I would like scanner evaluation that you people can feed into and say, this is a great scanner and here's why. And we will have templates, I hope, available online that would allow you to essentially provide some objective measurement of a scanner. Or just give us comments on a scanner and we'll have those collated and placed available. Because we can't buy everything that you've got. On the economic front, let me just say that the piece of Cambium I'm a part of, which is Cambium Learning Technologies, I don't even remember my own name, had a dismal first half of the year. We've made up for it in the last 4 months and then some, and are now ahead of our initial budget, and it looks like it will be a great year. This is called stimulus money. Mm-hmm. Turns out in the education market it really does work, but it took half a year before it began to kick in. So for technology like Kurzweil 3000, we're at the moment selling like gangbusters. It's great. So I have every reason to expect we'll have reasonable funding next year for other things. So.
What's the cost of the 3000?
Well, it's one of those hard questions to answer because there are several models. And the 3000, since it's sold largely not to individuals but to school systems, is often bought in really big quantities. When you buy it in really big quantities, it gets pretty cheap. Let me add, the Kurzweil 1000 has a quantity discount too, which not everyone knows about. There's a 10-seat license. And a 10-seat license, which is primarily for educational institutions, let's say, is, I think, $2,895. So you're talking under $300 per unit for that kind of thing. The list price of a color professional Kurzweil 3000, which is sort of equivalent to a 1000 in functionality, except of course that it's all this educational stuff too, is in the neighborhood of, I think it's about $1,400, mm-hmm. $1,500. Yeah. There's a black and white version, i.e. it won't scan in color. That's $1,100. And then there is a version that doesn't scan, but just reads other documents. Because what you tend to do in a school is have a couple scan stations and a bunch of stations where students can work and just read. And those, quantity one, are, I think, about $400.
If Vibog could put up a number of people to purchase, mm-hmm. is there something you could do for a multiple license within the organization, even though knowing it was individuals, like a 10C license, because the price is one-third, even less? Could this organization do that for its members?
I know that when that has been raised to our sales VP, she has pretty flatly said, no, that's not what we mean by a site. Not one building, it's not one collection of buildings. I don't think it's impossible to imagine us doing some kinds of discounts for things like that. Let me add, by the way, that there's the price of the product is $995 for 1,000 for a competitive upgrade, which means you've got open book, it's $595. For a upgrade from any release to the current release, it's $125.
That's most companies will charge you for every upgrade, whether you ever used it or not, which is why people like Jeffrey Drucker like to keep every release on his machine. But that's one difference. If you have version 6 and you haven't done anything since version 6, you can go to 12 for that. That's phenomenal.
Version 12. First thing I'm going to talk about things you should not care about at all that are in there. Upgrade to .NET. One of the things that took us a while in doing this is we went to Microsoft's current development environment. We are using .NET 3.5 in this product. The only reason this should matter to you is it is a statement of the company's commitment to the future of this product. If they didn't intend to ever do another release after 12, it would have been an incredible waste of time to move to .NET 3.5, because the reason you do something like that is because if you want to hire developers, they want to work on the current technology, not the 10-year-old technology that the product was originally developed with. This is not something that gives you new features. It is not something that, you know, in any way gives the product bragging rights. The only big deal about it is it means there's a commitment to bring this product into the future. But it took a lot of time, I'll tell you that. 64-bit operating system support, so this will work without any real issues on 64-bit systems, including, of course, Windows 7 64-bit. No problem. I redid the currency recognition for English, for U.S. currency. No big deal. It embarrassed me to have it not work, since that was a feature that was unique to the product for a long time. And in order to prevent or minimize counterfeiting, the government reissues currency regularly and tries deliberately to make it harder and harder to scan. And it is harder. What I've done is a better attempt at it, and it does have the modern currencies in there. I have not done the same for foreign currency, not at this point. New OCR, always in some respects the most important thing about upgrading Kurzweil 1000 or any other OCR product. OCR does get better over time. This has ScanSoft, what we call ScanSoft version 16. It's OmniPage version 16. It's the same thing that would be in that release of the OmniPage product. And we also have FineReader version 9. Those are noticeably better. The beta testers like them quite a bit. ScanSoft, or the OmniPage one, has gotten noticeably faster, by the way. That or FineReader has gotten noticeably slower. But there's a more distinct difference between those two than there used to be. And it is really a pretty cool engine, works very well. Lots of things are very nice about those particular engines. I do get some pushback from people who say that's not the latest release, and they're right. The latest release for OmniPage is 17, not 16, and for FineReader it's 10, not 9. I don't have access to that, neither would any other company other than people who make that OCR. They always protect their current version, their current product, for about a year. So it's going to be a while till 10 suddenly becomes available to someone like me. A USB version of the product. Now, there's a version of the product, or will be soon, this piece isn't actually out yet, that is a 4 GB thumb drive, and the Kurzweil 1000 within it is locked to that thumb drive. You can plug the thumb drive into any computer that has sufficient power to run the product, and that is a Windows product. or running a reasonably current operating system, and you can run from the thumb drive. There are downsides. It takes longer to start because you're loading from a thumb drive. Thumb drives aren't as fast as your disk. Really, I guess that's my main downside. It is otherwise pretty thoroughly the same product. There's very, very few changes. There is a tendency for it to think that you always want to default to write your files to it as the thumb drive, which of course makes sense. That would be your default. But you don't have to do that. You can write them elsewhere. It is not quite available. By the way, if you have the existing Kurzweil 1000, you can upgrade to the USB version if you want. I think it's a $30 price difference. So if you want... for $155 instead of $125, you could go to the USB version.
That's got okay. One, can you buy the other separate? I mean, will they allow you to allow that? If you've got 12 like now, just buy it.
That a good question?
Buy the whole thing
so
for
you'd work. Like a price, like an upgrade price, basically.
Yeah, like a price for, yeah.
Okay. I'll tell you the danger of that from our perspective, and it's why you may notice that we don't give you new serial numbers when you get a new list. The reason is because it's often perfectly reasonable for you to imagine that now that you've upgraded to version 12, you can sell off your version
12. Yeah, no.
And you can't. You can't legally do that. And the reason from a purely money standpoint is because you're competing with us as in selling your product. We end up worrying about that. That would be the one hitch in that, because here you would really have two products, two different serial number situations. It's a very good question. Let's see, there's a couple things the USB version can't do without running a small install. One is the virtual printer, the other is the fax printer. A print driver just cannot run from a USB device, it has to be local. And so we've included little install procedures to install those on any machine you want to install them on, if that becomes something you have to do. You know, I find the USB version slightly slower. The other thing is it can be a pain in the neck to shut down properly. You know, you have to get out of the product, and then ideally you should go through the appropriate Microsoft operating system procedure to release the drive. And a ridiculous number of times it will tell you the drive's busy. You can't do that. And this, it turns out, is a bug. And it is not our bug. It is a bug in a technology called ThinSol, which is what we're using to put this stuff on the USB. So it's unfortunate, and we try to provide some procedures to work around it, but it can be annoying.
With the USB version, do you need administrative rights on the computer that you're using?
No.
Only if you want to install the printer and fax driver.
Yes, if you did want to install those things, you'd have to move to administrative rights. You shouldn't even need it for registration, I think. I think you'd be okay for that. One other thing, of course, is in order to check in, it will access the internet. And depending on how tightly locked down your machine would be, the machine may not allow it, or the operating system may not allow it. I know that can sometimes be a problem, depending on your firewall software and depending upon your what you're allowed to do. If you cannot get to the internet, the product will run anyway. It keeps a counter, and it will run a certain number of times without accessing the internet. And if it reaches those times, you know, you'll get a warning that this is it. You really have to find a system with an internet connection so that we can find out that this is still a working license. The reason for that is, what happens if you lose your USB? It happens. I think for $100 you can get another one from us. That new one will have to be registered again, and your old registration number on the old one is taken off. So it can still be used 30 times, and then it sort of doesn't self-destruct, but it just won't be able to be used.
In terms of finding out if any particular computer can run the USB, you have some way of having the software check to verify the system specification and tell the person, look, this machine doesn't have enough to run the software, something like that. So that
there was verification that it'll run before you buy. Yeah.
That would be nice, and the answer is no, it will just do something disappointing. the most likely thing you would find is that the speech would start and it would sound truly horrible because it would be cutting in and out on a regular basis. People describe it as sounding like static. It's a lot of static in the voice. If that happens, it's because you're running on a lower memory system. If, of course, you're running on a system that's wildly incompatible, it simply won't start. There's things like that.
There are suggested specifications of what you ideally should run.
Yeah. And, you know, one answer is any machine you can buy in the store today is fine. This is another warning versus version 11. If you're running version 11 and you're quite happy about it, or 10 or 9 or 8, and you're running it and it's great on this machine that you bought 5 years ago, and you're not going to spend the money to buy a new machine, think long and hard before you move to version 12. Version 12 will use a lot more memory.
Mm-hmm.
CPU usage is probably about the same, but memory usage is dramatically higher. That has to do with, you know, with .NET. You know, what you end up needing is a fast disk, a lot of virtual memory, or just, you know, a honking amount of serious real memory. 1 gigabyte is no longer a lot of memory, not with .NET. I think our spec will say something like it will run in a system with 500 megabytes of 512 and, you know, Pentium 4 processor, and it's true, it will run, but you won't love the result. To really like the result, I do know of people who are complaining with a 1 gig of memory. And on the other hand, I've run with 1 gig and been happy. So it depends.
It also depends on what you're doing.
Yeah, it depends on what else you have running. Yeah. It depends on whether you keep your screen reader active in the background. There's a million other things that are taking memory as you run. And it probably depends on what operating system you use too. You know, anything gig or under, there's a possibility that you'll want to look at what you're doing, find more memory, and do something. Improved reference tools, updated American Heritage Dictionary, and probably one of everybody's sort of the sexy feature to show, although this one takes a lot of disk space, is we now have a WAV file with a human recording of a human being speaking for every word in the American Heritage Dictionary. That human being is guaranteed to say the word correctly, but it's kind of a neat feature. And we have customers, by the way, all over the world, and some of them use the product to learn English. So this is a big feature for people like that who are building their vocabulary with that machine. I do remember in the really old days of EchoNet technology that a lot of blind people were using, you could tell over the phone that someone was blind if they mentioned the word sysop.
Yep.
That was DecTalk's pronunciation for sysop.
Yep.
Some changes in PDF input. A rather modest one is that when you try to open a PDF file, the very first thing it's going to do is it will tell you how many pages are in that file. And it will give you the option to recognize all of them, one of them, some of them. The default is to recognize all of them. Hit enter and it will go off. But if you want to just recognize some, you can do that. The main reason for that actually is schools for the blind that are pairing documents. And they often want to break PDF files into chapters. So that's one reason for that. A second thing is if you've been recognizing a PDF file for a while and you want to go do something else, you may, in the current version, run into the situation where, well, you can save what you've done, but if you ever open the PDF file again, you're stuck starting at page one and have to do it all over again, and it's annoying. Now, you could interrupt, save as a KESI file, come in later, open the KESI file, and we'll ask you if you want to continue recognizing. If you want to continue, fine, go ahead. We know what page you left off on, and we'll take care of that for you. Open a PDF file in Kurzweil 1000. If the PDF file had bookmarks, which they often do, those bookmarks will be transferred over to the KESI file when you save it. So, for example, if you were to open the PDF version of The Economist magazine, you would find it fully bookmarked after you opened it. And that's actually a really nice feature. I like that a lot. Now, I'm going to mention one that's a little complicated, but it has a bit to do with PDF, which is there is now a utility that comes with the product that, in general, you don't run to look at its user interface. You just run to have it automatically recognize things. It's called KOCRU. And you tend to run it from Windows Explorer. You would select, let's say, a folder, and you would bring up the context menu, and then there's an option that says recognize documents in this folder automatically with Kurzweil. And click on that, and it will go off in the background and do that. While it's doing that, you can do other things. Now, of course, what it's going to do is based on defaults that you set. In order to set those defaults, you would run that program interactively, which is also available through that context menu. In the interactive version, you can decide where you want the output files to go.
Like maybe they should go in the same folder that you're currently in, or maybe they should go to some special place. You can choose which OCR engine to use. You can choose which languages ought to be recognized. You can choose from a variety of interesting output formats and a bunch of other things. You can choose to retain images. By here, we don't mean the image of the whole page. We mean the snapshots that are in the document. So if you happen to need those for some reason, in color even, you can do that. All of this works with PDF files and TIFF files, multi-page or single page, and JPEG files. So it will go through and find any of those file types in your current folder, in the folder you selected, and do that thing. The other thing that's useful about this utility, or worth knowing about it, is for something like a PDF file, doing it that way will run faster. It will recognize that PDF file faster than if you did so in Kurzweil 1000 itself. Kurzweil 1000 is designed to recognize a page at a time. You give it an image, it recognizes the image, it adds the image to an existing document, lets you edit it, lets you read it, all that stuff. OCR engines, increasingly, in order to get the last bit of speed that they can get out of these things or to get really, really good formatting, want to be given a document, not a page. Ideally, you would give it 100 pages at once. So why would you give it 100 pages at once? Well, if you have a multi-core processor, the one I have at work has four cores, it will spool off one page at a time into each of those four cores simultaneously. When one of those cores finishes, it gets another page. That doesn't make it four times as fast, because lots of other things have to happen, but it makes it 60% faster, roughly. Both OCR engines support that. But the other thing is, if you have 100 pages of recognized stuff, and you save it in a format like RTF, things like font identification work better if you can say, and these 100 pages are all from the same document, because it's going to coalesce all those fonts that it came up with, font identifications came up with, into a smaller set. You will, in general, get more consistent and better formatting. It may not matter to you if all you're doing is using speech, but it may matter to you if you're repurposing the document in some way. There's a fair number of formats this utility supports. The one it doesn't support is KES. It doesn't support KES because we're running the OCR engines directly and telling them to produce the output format. They don't know from KES. Never heard of it. So they can't support our format directly. But, you know, write to RTF and you can certainly bring it into Kurzweil 1000 very quickly. Another feature, new user wizard. One of the things that sets Kurzweil 1000 apart from every other product like it is its online manual and its online context-sensitive help are dramatically better than anybody else's. Hit F1 almost anywhere and you will get good, reliable, context-specific information for where you are in any particular dialogue, in any particular control. And the manual is, well, I can tell you, it's roughly four times the size of the manual of our competitor. And maybe that's just because we're wordy, but you know, in general, I think it's because we are covering things pretty thoroughly. This is new, and it is a recognition that there are features in the product that a new user maybe ought to know about really quickly that they may never discover, of which my favorite example is Autoload. Autoload, some of you know this feature, but Autoload is a feature in the configuration that you turn it on, and you no longer have to worry about saving your documents when you exit from the product. It will just save them, and they will be opened automatically when you open the product again. That's not a great mode for everyone. For example, if this machine's in a library, it's a terrible mode because you're going to open the documents of the person before you. However, in some circumstances, it's nice. And it's really great for people who are not particularly savvy computer users and don't want to worry about remembering file names. So that feature exists, and new users ought to know about it, but it's off by default and is buried in a configuration menu. So the new user wizard provides a dialog box when you first start the product with a bunch of topics. They're all new user-oriented topics. There's maybe about 14, 15 of them. Each of them present roughly a page of text. At the end of that text, a lot of them let you either turn on that feature if you want it on or off, or let you experiment with the dialog box or play around with other things. So it does more than just give you documentation. It gives you immediate access to a particular feature it's described.
Can I just quick question?
Yes.
With the scanner, does it matter what resolution it is? I mean,
resolution, default is 300 dots per inch. And that's fine for most OCR applications. If what you're scanning is, let's say, 12-point laser-printed office documents, you can drive a scanner faster by running it at 200 dots per inch. And the recognition of this is easy material. On the other hand, if you are scanning your CD liner notes, which are in 6-point type, and it is horrible and nearly impossible to read, there's actually a 400, even a 600 dot per inch setting in Kurzweil. Modern scanners do 2400 dots per inch because they're very, when you get down to it, they're very photo-oriented. Mm-hmm. You know, they're for scanning high.
So I don't really have to worry about that.
No,
that's something that just will work fine with lots of them.
There's apparently some new kind of scanner technology they're calling flash technology, which works like similar to a digital camera. It takes the whole page at one time, yeah, rather than the mechanical camera that's moving back and forth. Is that a live product that I can buy today?
Yeah, I can point you in the direction of a local competitor of mine who makes, I think, a really cool product. Anybody know Abbasi?
The iPal Solo that we saw last month, Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Okay, but it doesn't work with Kurzweil, though, does it?
No. Although, boy, do I get a lot of requests for that. Because it's very, very fast, it's portable, it's very cool, it works great, and people buy those things a lot. And I think they've done a wonderful job overall on that product. The reason I still get a lot of people then asking me, can I use Kurzweil 1000 with my iPal, mm-hmm, is that although this product has great OCR and some really innovative ideas, there's a lot about its functionality that leaves something to be desired. Yeah, if you, for example, want reasonably formatted output, they just don't do that. Now, there are things that we're better at. Boy, that's a great device. And I would love to work with it, by the way. And I've talked to them on a few occasions, but as a company, we seem to be kind of allergic to hardware. So it's difficult for me to move very quickly in that direction. If you have some vision, there's always been a feature in the product where you can keep images when you scan, and you can show those images in by pressing Control plus W or using the tools menu. That has been enhanced somewhat. One thing you can do now is if you hit Control W the first time, you'll get the image in the full page. If you hit it again, you'll get a split screen. You'll have the image above, you'll have the text below. They will synchronize reasonably well while they're reading or while you're moving around in one view and not the other. And the really nice thing is for, again, situations where people are preparing documents, like in schools for the blind, people with some vision can edit those documents really quickly by referring to the original image on their screen while they are editing in the window below it. Another thing about the image mode is it used to be it was a dialog box and you had to exit from that box to do something like move to the next page. That's no longer true. It's essentially a mode, and so you can go to another page, you can page up, you can page down, you can do other things and still stay in that same mode. Not necessarily a big deal, but it's been asked for.
Doing code with this would be fine. Keep the indents if you scan code. Is there a way to do that?
It's not perfect. It has, by the way, in the list of recognition languages, it has languages like C++. So you can specify that what you're scanning is code. What you then want to do is output it as text. And when you do so, turn off paragraphs. Essentially treat paragraph endings and line endings as though they were the same thing and respect line endings. And that way, at least, it won't run 14 lines of computer code together thinking it's one paragraph, which is really devastating when it does that. And it will, in general, keep the indents, though not perfect. They won't be exactly right. Audio output. A couple things about audio output that are worth knowing about. One is when you create an MP3 file, let's say, one of the things you can do now is specify a playlist for your iPhone. So by doing that, when you create the audio file, when you're done with that, it is in your playlist. And as a consequence, moving it to your iPhone becomes really easy in the iPhone iTunes software. By putting it in a playlist in Kurzweil 1000, when it's created, it becomes known to iTunes.
Oh.
When you bring up iTunes, it's very easy to select that playlist and read it, or select that playlist and copy it to an iPhone. And as a consequence, you have easier access to it. It's just kind of a neat trick.
Why do people do MP3 files out of Kurzweil?
The main reason they're doing it is because they're very interested in listening to a book using a voice that Kurzweil uses, like NeoSpeech. But they want to listen to it portably on an MP3 player somewhere else. That's the main reason people do things like that. And they do it a lot. It's a very popular feature of the product.
Has that always been there?
It's been there for quite a while. You get there from File, Menu, Utilities, then there's Create Audio, something like that. There are other ways to create them too, but that's one way. You can also create Audio Daisy that way. Similarly, not just MP3, but also Audio Daisy. We've enhanced the Audio Daisy and the MP3 and WAV file output, for that matter, to support the way we read tables, which you may know, we switch voices, we announce that you're entering a table, we tell you how many columns and rows there are, we announce when you move from one row to the next. And we never used to do that when you wrote audio. Now if you create an audio file, you do that. A related feature is that in the last release, we made it possible for you to open and play MP3 files in Kurzweil 1000 and to bookmark them. So you could bookmark an MP3 file just like you bookmark any other document you have open in Kurzweil 1000. That immediately caused someone to say, now that I've got an MP3 file that's bookmarked, can I save it as an Audio Daisy file? And I found myself embarrassed for not having thought about that, because it's actually a really good idea. You can now do that in version 12. That's available. There's some better image compressing. I did something remarkably geeky in Search and Replace that only a handful of people will think is a good idea. You can now turn on regular expression processing in Search and Replace. Regular expressions are a wonderful technology that's difficult to learn, but once you learn it, it's really great. That allow you to do something like, for example, with a lot of work, I could make a regular expression that would search for Roman numerals in a document. I could make one that would search for phone numbers in a document. One that's really
email
easy.
Email addresses.
One that's really easy to do is I could make one that will search for words in a document that are preceded by a lowercase letter but followed by an uppercase letter, where that uppercase letter is not capital C. Why would I do that? The capital C case is because Scottish names use that all the time, and it gets annoying when you run into those. But other than that, it might well be an error that you want to fix. And so that might be something you intend to want to search for. It's also a way in which you can really get yourself into trouble. So, and I don't think all our great documentation explains regular expressions in detail. There are books on the subject. When you go out and buy them, there's some good tutorials on the internet about it. It can be complicated. Corrections and pronunciations. You can now provide a pronunciation replacement for a phrase as well as a word. So why would you want to do that? Because you're really tired of the way a certain speech engine pronounces foie gras, for example, and you want to fix it. You couldn't fix that in the past, except as two separate words. Now you can fix that as a phrase if you want to. A feature we added a long time ago is the ability to send a document to a device. And we populated the list of devices, which we had a bunch of, at the time, all the known blindness devices that we could think of that we might want to send to, like the Braille and Speak. This was back a lot of years. And it was a fairly popular feature, but we always would get requests from manufacturers about, well, what about this new device? What about this? What about that? What we've added now is the ability for you to define your own devices in Send To setting. And we're taking advantage of the fact that all modern devices look like a disk once they're plugged in, and typically plug in with USB. So we let you specify a bunch of things about them. It doesn't just send. It also will automatically convert to the appropriate format for that device in the act of sending. And it can do that even if the appropriate format is MP3. Well, I think that case might work. Audio Daisy is a case that I know will work. So you can, for example, specify that your output device is a Victor stream and that the only format it understands with this particular menu item is DAISY audio, and the files have to go in a particular location. This is the location. And once you set that up once, you don't have to set it up again, and you can select any number of files, hit one button. We will do the conversion to audio DAISY and write them to that device. So it's a fairly easy way to transfer files from one place to another. This is just another feature I think is cute. And this was suggested by one of our testers years ago, and I finally got around to it. I was really pleased that I finally did. In the Kurzweil 1000 file open dialog, if you have a file selected in your list of files, if you hit right arrow, it will open up a list of the bookmarks in that document. And you can up arrow and down arrow through those bookmarks. Right arrow again, you might get to the bookmarks underneath the first level of bookmarks. So it's basically a tree view that gives you an often in-depth way of navigating through the bookmarks of the document without actually having to open the document first.
I've known about your product for a number of years. I balked at the price because like 90% of your functionality is not something I need to use right now. I'm not doing anything with books at all. I have a small amount of mail that comes, you know, scale mail that comes to my house. Mostly I'm getting PDF documents through the internet, which are graphical, and you try to work with them and they turn into TIFF, which just makes things worse. So mostly those are my two applications, so some mail and documents I get over the internet. If I get a tough document, I send it over to the Carroll Center. They scan it for me with Kurzweil and send it back to me as a Word document. Is there some medium level product or way that I can get just those functions that I want without having to buy the whole big Kurzweil package?
Not from us, and we're not likely to do that. And the reason is because it actually costs a lot of money to launch a product. Even a variant of a product where you think the development isn't a big deal. There is the packaging, and there is the bill of materials for that. And this is all this other rot that goes along with that, that makes that somewhat unlikely. But in your case, what I can recommend, use a commercial listener engine. They're not that expensive. People in general find Abbey Fine Reader to be a really good product and accessible with JAWS, reasonably good to use. You can scan with it. You can use it to open things like PDF documents. Or even easier, there are products both from Nuance and from Abbey for converting PDF files. If PDF is the problem, buy a PDF converter program. And what you'll find is instead of paying, you know, $995 for stuff that we have, you'll be paying roughly $100, maybe $200 for, you know, the high end of the OCR market. They actually have list prices in the $400 range, but it's one of those things where no one really pays that price. They just like to pretend it's really that price. What a product like Kurzweil offers you is a much more convenient access to that kind of functionality, and a company that is thinking about the needs of the blind person when they're making the product. Anything else, and you have to kind of adapt to the majority view of what this product is about, which is, you know, to make pretty pictures or to, you know, do other things that are really of more interest perhaps to the side of the market. That doesn't mean that those products are incredibly hard to use. They're not that hard to use. And if your usage is relatively casual, if it's something you don't want to do an immense amount of, it's a much cheaper way to go.
KNFB's, the K is Kurzweil. Kurzweil Educational Systems, the K is Kurzweil. What's going on there?
Well, Ray Kurzweil is a futurist. He's a very famous inventor of a lot of technologies. He gets so many awards that he's run out of room to put them on in his walls. He started the original Kurzweil computer products, which I started this conversation with, in 77, I think. And he has probably founded at least 14 companies, something like that. They always start with the letter K. And it does mean that we all constantly get phone calls from people who are interested, for example, in music synthesizers. And, you know, that isn't
so us. Your company has nothing to do with KNFB. It's just
right.
He flits around to different places.
Does he work with these companies still?
Depends on the company. The answer is usually no. I mean, after he sells them,
right,
he often provides a certain level of contact and support for a period of time. But in the end, he goes off and does something else. One of the things I like about Ray is he, despite an enormous number of different companies and ideas. He has a tendency to return now and then to blends. That was his first product category. And that was what Kurzweil Computer Products started with, what Kurzweil Educational Systems did as well, and still does. And KNFB, which is his third venture in that field.
I kind of heard that there's in regards to K3000, that there may be an Apple version for the Mac. Is there any love for Mac as far as being accessible?
There is a version of Kurzweil 3000 that runs on the Mac. The Kurzweil 3000 is usually designed so that it can be used by a blind person even without a screen reader. It too is self-voicing. However, it is a kind of poor sister to the Windows product. Mm-hmm. We have problems with the Mac platform. One of the problems is we're on the East Coast. All the Mac developers are out on the West Coast. Not all of them, but most of them. It's not easy to get Mac talent here, particularly because frequently they end up wanting to work in a company that has lots of Mac products so that they can work with other Mac developers. They don't want to work in a situation like the one that we tend to have, which is we hire one poor Mac guy sitting in the corner trying to do all support a zillion things that we do on Macintosh. I'd love to do more Mac stuff than we do. Right now, I have no Mac development at all at Kurzweil. And despite the fact that actually as a company, we sell a couple Mac products, we end up actually having to hire consultants to fix bugs at this point. It's annoying. I don't like it at all.
Well, thank you for putting up with me.
Thank you.